Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Yud Amud Aleph. The Mishnah begins, Heter Nedarim Porchim Ba'avir Ve'en Lehem Amash Yismochu. When it comes to Hatarat Nedarim, which is the ability of an individual to unwind retroactively their neder through the process of taking it to a Chacham and explaining why they have Charata, why they didn't intend for this to be the outcome of their neder, the Chacham can then be Matir the neder. Now, Hatarat Nedarim, as the Mishnah says, is not something that is explicitly found in the Torah. It's something from the Torah Shir Be'al Peh, but the Chachamim learned it out from a small limudim or diukim out of the psukim, which we will see in the Gemara itself. So that's what it means here. There's no actual mikra. There is no pasuk that actually teaches you this explicitly, but rather it's just a remez in the psukim that is learned through the Torah Shir Be'al Peh. Hilchot Shabbat, Chagigot, Vamiilot. When it comes to the Lochot of Shabbat, the Chagigah, which obviously is why this is found in our Masechta, the Mi'ilot is someone who misappropriates Hekdesh. Harehem keharim atluim bise'ara. They are like mountains that are hanging on a hair. Shem mikra mu'at. They have very little in terms of the psukim. Valochot mirubot. But they have extensive halochot that are associated with them, and very little that's actually written explicitly in the Torah. The Gemara will ask, what exactly is that that is not written or that we do not know about them? But as Rashi points out over here, it's Karim Tluim Bisarot Arosh. It's like a huge mountain sitting on a thin hair of the head. So there are Ramazim, there are hints to these items in the Psukim. There are small amount of Psukim that speak about the issues that we're going to discuss, but nevertheless, there are many, many halachot and many, many manifestations of these halachot. So they are mikra mu'at v'halachot mirubot. Small number of psukim, but large number of halachot. Hadinim v'avodot, hateharot v'atmeot. The mishpatim, basic civil law. Anything to do with avodat ha'korbanot, tarot and tmeot. Arayot and the dinim of illicit relations. Yesh lema mashis mochu. They have explicit psukim. They have extensive psukim in the Torah. The hein gufei Torah. And that is the fundamentals or the core of the Torah. The Gemara will obviously ask, what about the rest? Why are they not considered to be gufei Torah? And the Gemara is going to go piece by piece through our Mishnah and discuss what each of these means. So now the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Yesh lahem amashis mochu. Really, there is a reason to believe why you can have Heter Nidarim. Again, the Mishnah states that there's no explicit pasuk about Heter Nidarim, and there's no real basis for it. But now we're going to have statements from the Tanaim and from the Amoraim as to why one would consider the possibility that Heter Nidarim is hinted to in the Torah or in the Psukim. It says, Kishenemar, because it says, Ki afli, shtei pe'amim. The word Ki afli, which means to explicate and to speak clearly about your intentions, is mentioned twice in the Torah. It's mentioned once in the Parsha of Arachin, and once also in the Parsha of Nazir. So why does it have ki afli, this expression found twice in the Torah? Achat hafla ali sur. One of them is explication or a statement, clear statement to be oser. Achat hafla aleter. And the other one is a statement to say that one is mutar. Rabbi Yoshua offers another alternative, Omar. Yesh lehem amashi smochu, there is a smach, there is a basis for the fact of Heter Nedarim. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Asher nishbati bi'api, that it says that Hashem said that I took a shvuah bi'api, in my anger. Bi'api nishbati, I took my shvuah bi'api in my anger, v'chazarti bi, and then I retracted it. So you see there's that possibility of retracting when someone says something, a shvuah that they take, because bi'api was done in my anger. So that itself tells you what the heter would be, and that there is an ability to reverse that which was said. Rabbi Yitzchok Omer, Yesh lehem amashis mochu. There is a basis for the fact of Heteret Nedarim Shnemar, because it says, Kol Nediv Libo. It says anybody whose generosity or of generous heart gave. So the way that Rabbi Yitzchok is viewing this is that it says that they pledged to give to the Mishkan, but after they pledged to give to the Mishkan, the only people that actually had to give to the Mishkan are those that were Nediv Libo. If he still was of the same frame of mind, or he still believed that he wanted to give it, then he gave it. But had he changed his mind, he wouldn't have had to give to the Mishkan, even though he had pledged earlier, made a nether to give it. Hananya ben Achi, Rabbi Yoshua Amir, Yesh lehem amishmosh smochu. Again, there is a basis for a Torah in Derim, Shenemar, Nishbati, v'kaima lishmor mishpatei tzidkecho. So I took a shvua to uphold, to keep the tenets of your righteousness. So again, there is two stages here. There is nishbati, I took a shvua, v'akaimo, and then I upheld it or I kept the shvua that I took. So again, there's a possibility of akaimo, that I will keep the shvua, but there's also a possibility that I will not keep the shvua, and that comes through the heter nidarim. I'm Rav Yehuda Meshmo, if I was there, Amr Lehu, didi, adifa mididcho. I would have given a reason that would have trumped all of their reasons, shenamar, because it says about an individual who takes a neder, lo yachel divaro, he may not profane that which he said. Hu eino mochel, he may not profane, aval acherim mochelim lo, but others can free him of that obligation, free him of that neder. Samarova, the kulu, it lohu pircho, the bar midishmuel. All of them have a way, or a logical way, to undermine their position, except for that position of Shmuel, the late Pirchot, where there is nothing to undermine this. We had a similar statement, so it happens a couple times in Shas. We had it in the Gemara in Yoma, as well as in the Gemara in Megillah. There, the Gemara in Megillah wants to know, how do you know that Esther is Beruach HaKodesh? The Gemara in Yoma wants to know, how do we know that Pikuach Nefesh is Dochet HaShabbat? In each of these cases, you have a slew of Tanaim that give reasons. And then there's Namora Shmo at the end who gives a reason, and that reason is better than all the reasons of the Tanaim. And we have a statement that I was a pircha. There's a way to logically undermine all the other reasons except for that of the Amora Shmuel. Now the Gemara goes through each of the Tanaim to explain why you can undermine them. Dima Rabbi Elazar, the limit of Rabbi Elazar, which says that Kif Yafli twice, Dilma Kid Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe it's like Rabbi Yehuda. Shamar Mishum Rabbi Tarfon, the Tanya Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Mishum Rabbi Tarfon, the Olam Ein Echad Mehem Nazir. None of them are Nazir, Shalonit na Nizirut el Afla, because Nizirut only works when one can be specific, explicit, and with certainty that they will become a Nazir. The case is, for instance, where two individuals are sitting on a bench, they see a guy walking towards them, and one of them says, I'm a Nazir if he's a Nazir. And the guy next to them says, I'm a Nazir if he's not a Nazir. The Gemara there says that neither of them become Nizirim, because you have to be Hafla'a. You have to make a statement by which you will for certain become a Nazir, or you know the outcome of it. You can't have it be talua. You can't be able to have it hanging or dependent on something else. And therefore, the word hafla'a comes to teach you that it has to be explicit, and it has to be clear in order to become a Nazir. So we have that for a different limud. It's not available for this limud of heter nedarim. The word hafli comes to teach us this din, that it has to be a clear and succinct, absolute acceptance of one's Nazirut. If you're learning from Yeshua, maybe this is what the pasuk means. I took the shua in my anger, and I didn't reverse it. I did not track that position. Tosfot over here says, by the way, that's got to be the explanation, because we know that the end of the pasuk is nishbati api im yavon el menuchati, if they will reach the promised land. We're talking about here the Dor HaMidbar, and the Dor HaMidbar does not make it into Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem's shvua is here, is that they won't make it into the land, and that's sure enough what happened. So the understanding of the pasuk must be exactly what we're saying here, ba'pi nishbati, v'lo adranabi, I didn't go back on it. Tosafot opens up the possibility, based on a machloket in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in Perek HaChelek, that there is deah there that the Dor HaMidbar made it to Olam Haba, and then based on that, he wants to suggest that maybe there was a different outcome where Hashem might have retracted his anger or his shvuah, so they might not have made it to the Holy Land, but they might have made it to Olam Haba. In Rabbi Yitzchak and the limud of Rabbi Yitzchak, Dilmal Afuke Midishmuel. Maybe the position of Rabbi Yitzchak, the posuk of Rabbi Yitzchak, is coming to take away from the position of Shmuel, which is Damar Shmuel. Gamar Bilibo Tzrich Shiotzi B'Sfatav. Someone who decides to do something in his heart, he must articulate that. This is a locha that comes up many times when we want to make a tnai, a condition, a promise. Anything like that has to be done in a manner where it's not just in your heart. Dvarim shebelev enem dvarim. You have to articulate it. So dvarim shebelev have to come out. Yotzi bisfatav. V'akamash malon. This pasuk teaches us, gamar b'nebo, da'avagav d'lotzi bisfatav. That even though he didn't articulate it, he would still be on the hook for it. So that would be a limud from this pasuk. Not that Shmuel disagrees with the pasuk. The pasuk says, gamar b'nebo, it would work, because it says nidiv libo over here. Just that Shmuel would narrow or qualify that and say that only applies by kodoshim. It does not apply broadly, whereas we could take the pasuk to extend it even a more broader sense, and that's what the meaning, or that's what the necessity of that pasuk is, and not for the limud of Rabbi Yitzchak. It says, Ibn Nechanya ben Achi, Rabbi Yoshua, if it was Chananya, the nephew of Rabbi Yoshua, Dimo ki Rabbi Gido Amarav. Maybe he used that pasuk for this limud. Amar Rabbi Gido Amarav, minayin shenishbaim lekayim et ha-mitzvah. How do you know that you can take a shvu'ah to keep a mitzvah. Shenemar, nishbati v'akayimah lishmor mishpatei tzedekecha. I take a shvuah to uphold or keep your mitzvot. So here you see that there's a value in taking a shvuah b'shem Hashem to encourage an individual in order to do a mitzvah. Ela d'shmuel leitlei pircha. But Shmuel's statement doesn't have any logical undermining of its position. And therefore, Amarova, v'yitem Rav Nachman Yitzchak, hainu damar inshe. That is the colloquialism, the pitgam that people say. Tava chada pilputa harifta. Better is one hot, sharp pepper, mimale tzana dekare, than a whole basket full of gourds. So here, one sharp one like Shmuel, who comes up with the right reason, is better than all the other reasons that we had from the Tanaim. Now the Gemara says, Hilchot Shabbat. Gemara says, Hilchot Shabbat, Michtav Ketivan. Many psukim in the Torah tell us, Lo tasu melacha. There are many, many psukim in the Torah that tell you you have to keep Shabbat, and that you're not allowed to do melacha on Shabbat. So what are you telling us? That there are few psukim in the Torah. It's just not true. Gemara says, Lo tshicha the Rabbi Abba. We need it for Rabbi Abba. The din of Rabbi Abba is not explicit in the psukim, and it's an important din with regards to Shabbat. Damar Rabbi Abba, Chofer Guma b'Shabbat, person who digs a ditch on Shabbat, ve'in tzarich al afra, and he only needs the dirt that he's taking out of the pit, patur alea, then he is patur. Kiman, who's that like? He Rabbi Shimon, damar, melacha shen tzarich al gufa, patur alea. A melacha that you don't need for the intended purpose of the melacha, you are patur. That's the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, that melacha shen tzarich al gufa is patur, aval asur. Afilu teimer Rabbi Yehuda, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who believes that melacha shen tzarich al gufa is chayav, nevertheless, over here he would agree, because hotam mitagein. In the court case where this argument takes place, the court case where it takes place is in a case of a mate, person who has been niftar, person who has passed away, then they want to remove him from the house. So that is a melocha shen tzricha legufa. You're not carrying him because you want to carry the mate, you're carrying the mate because you want the mate out of the house. So that's a melocha shen tzricha legufa. Over there, Rabbi Shimon says, patur aval asur, and therefore he is matir with certain conditions, whereas Rabbi Yehuda believes that it is chayav, and therefore you can't do anything about the mate. So the Gemara says, in that case, he is mitakein. He fixes the situation by removing the mate from that place. That helps him out. But over here, hocha mikalkohu. Here, when he's digging the dirt out of his field, he's digging a huge ditch in the middle of his field. It's actually ruining his field. So here, it's a mikalkel. Like, all kola mikalkelim are paturim. So too, the mikalkel over here would be patur. And even Rabbi Yehuda would agree in this instance. So now, the Gemara says that what we're talking about here is Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba says that the din of melacha she'en tzricha l'gufa is something that is not obvious or explicit in the psukim. So, my garim tluim sara, what does it mean that it's like a mountain that is hanging by a hair's breadth? Because melechet machshevet asrat Torah, or melechet machshevet lo ktiva. The reason why by melacha she'en tzricha l'gufa one is patur is because by the dinim of Shabbat, there's a requirement of melechet machshevet asrat Torah. It's only something that is melechet machshevet, something that's done with intent, that one is chayav for in the melechot of Shabbat. We don't actually learn that out from Shabbat. We actually learn that out from the juxtaposition to the melechet hamishkan, because by the melechet hamishkan, it calls it melechet machshevet. And when it calls it melechet machshevet, that juxtaposition to Shabbat tells us that also by Shabbat, melecha is only something that is classified as melechet machshevet. And therefore, melechet machshevet is not written explicitly in the Torah, but it's a din that is important and fundamental to the melachot of Shabbat, and that's where we learn out the din of melacha shein tzricha legufa is patur. Now, melachet machshevet teaches us a number of items. Number one is, it teaches us that one has to have intent for the melacha that they're about to do. Number two is, it teaches us that one has to have intent for the object upon which the melacha is going to be done. And in addition to that, it also tells us that the melacha that has been done has to parallel the melacha in the Mishkan. All three of these things are p'turim in Shabbat. Davar she'eino mitkavein. Something one doesn't intend to do something is patur or mutar on Shabbat. Machloket Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. The reason is because it's not melechet machshevet. Melechet machshevet says, I intend to do the melacha. In terms of mitasek, a person who is doing a melacha on an object that ends up with a different object or a different melacha, is also patur because of melechet machshevet. In addition to that, melacha she'ein tzricha legufa is also patur because of melechet machshevet, because you're not doing the melacha in the same way that it was done in the Mishkan. Here, it's actually a machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to why the melacha she'ein tzricha legufa is patur. Rashi claims over here is because you have no interest in doing this melacha. It was up to you, you'd rather not do this melacha than do the melacha. You're only doing the melacha because you need the other side of it. You need the dirt. You wouldn't care less about digging a hole in the ground. You only dig the hole to get to the dirt. That is why it's called a malacha shein tzrucho legufa. Same thing with the mate. You would rather that you didn't have the mate here. Now that you have the mate here and you have to get rid of it, that's a malacha shein tzrucho legufa. Tosafot disagrees with Rashi's explanation and says that the definition of a malacha shein tzrucho legufa is actually anything that does have the intended outcome that was done in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, you dug to build. You were choresh in a field to plow. If you do the simmer melacha, meaning the sigler activity, without the same end game or outcome as that which was done in the Mishkan, that's not called melechet machshevet, and one would be patur. That's a melacha, shein tzricha legufa, according to Tosafot. And now the Gemara moves on to chagigot. Again, by chagigah, michtach tivyon. We've been dealing with this all through our Masechta. The chiyuv of a chagigo is written in the Torah. So why are you saying over here that, again, that this is something that we don't have information about? Mar says, lo tzricha, v'damar le rapopo le abaye. It's like what Rapopo stated to Abaye, which is, mimai dahai v'chagote moto chag l'shem zvicha. How do you know that the pasuk that says that one celebrates a chag for Hashem, how do you know that the chag there, which we've explained before, Chazal tell us that that chag is the chagigah as a korban or a zevach, how do you know that that's actually the definition of chag over there? Dilma, maybe what the Torah means is chogu chaga kamar rachmana. Celebrate the holiday. That's maybe what the Torah means. According to Tosafot over here, brings the other position, the lashon mecholot. Maybe it means to dance, to celebrate through dancing and levity. That is what it's about. Who says it has to do with a korban? Elamayato, if that's the case, dichtiv, when it says by Bnei Yisrael, Moshe is telling Paro that he wants Bnei Yisrael to go out, vayachogu li bamidbar, that he explains that Hashem wants us to celebrate with him in the midbar. Doesn't mean that we want to go out there and party with Hashem. Hachanami the chogu chagahu, that means to go celebrate or to go dance. That's not what it means. Vichitayim hachanami, and you want to say, okay, maybe that's what it means. Vaktiv. Vayom Moshe, Moshe tells Paro, gamata titem biyadenu zvachim veolot. You're going to give us korbanot. So it's clear that they intend to go out there and bring korbanot. Their intention is not just to go out there and party. Mar says, dilma hachikamar. Rachmana, maybe this is what the Torah means. Echlu v'shitu v'chogu, meaning that you should eat, drink, chogu chaga kamai, and then celebrate in front of me. Where it says, lo sakod achdo, that you wouldn't think, tichtiv, lo yalin chelev chagiyat boker. It says, you may not leave over the fats of my chagiyah until the morning. So chelev has nothing to do with partying or dancing. V'isakod atcha de chugohu, then if it's a celebration or a dance, tarbo de chaga yidle, since when does that have anything to do with the fats? So the Gemara says, "Dilma hachi kamar rachmana." Maybe this is what the Torah means. Chelev abba mizman hachag, the chalavim that come during the celebration of the chag, lo yalin, you can't leave them over until the morning. So there's just a limitation as to when this restriction applies of leaving over items until the morning or past alot hashachar. Gemara says, "Lamata abba mizman hachag hu lo yalin, ha b'chol hashana kula yalin." Well, based on what you're suggesting now is that we would have a habamina that only on the chag you couldn't leave things over, but the rest of the year you could leave things over. Where it says, kol alayla ad aboker ktiv. The pasuk says that you can keep things all night ad aboker. From there we learn that you're allowed to put the evarim, tarim of the korbanot on until the morning. Otherwise it's considered to be lina. But that's a broad statement about all korbanot. Where it says, dilma ime ahu avamino. If it was from that, I would have thought, how will I say katav rachmana? That's why katav rachmana. That's what's coming as a positive commandment that we should do this. Hi, the lav. And this statement over here is about a lav. The lav, katav krachrina. Wait a minute, you want to talk about a negative precept? We have that from another pasuk. V'lo yalimin abasar shetizbach ba'erev b'yom rishon laboker. We have that in a different pasuk that teaches that you're not allowed to leave it over into the morning. Where it says, dimar lav or lav b'shnei lavim. Maybe it's coming to teach us that you're in violation of two negative commandments, v'asei, and a positive commandment. Ela atio. So how do we know that they have to bring a korban? It's a gzer shava midbar midbar. Ktiv achav yachogu liba midbar. It says over here that you will celebrate with before me or with me in the desert. We saw this earlier from Amos, that it says, did you bring korbanot for me in the midbar? Malahalan zvachim, just like the rhetorical question in Amos is, did you bring korbanot for me in the midbar? So too, avkan, by vayachugali, ba midbar, also means zvachim. And therefore, when we talk about chagigah, we're talking about not just a party, we're not talking about dancing, we're talking about actually bringing korbanot. What does it mean? This is like a mountain that is hanging by a hair's breadth. Because divrei Torah mi divrei Kabbalah lo yalfinan. Because we are now extrapolating something from the Navi to the Torah, meaning that we have a din that's found in Amos, and from Amos we're saying that that teaches us what the meaning of Chag is, And then we're extrapolating that and saying, okay, that now is applied to something in the Torah. So generally, we don't have the Divrei Kabbalah. We don't have the Navi teach us something about the Torah. Yet we're doing that here, and that's what it means. It's a halacha that is a fundamental part of Chagigah, because that's how we know we have to bring a Korban Chagigah. On the other hand, this basis for the fact that you have to bring a Zebach is very precarious. All right, the next one is Mi'ilot. Again, Michtach Tivan. This idea of misappropriating Hekdesh, that one is then culpable for that, that's also explicitly written in the Torah. Amarami Bachama lo Nisrucha ela Liknan. We need that for the Mishnah. Ashliach se'asa shlichuto balabait ma'al. A shliach who carries out his agency, then the balabait is mo'el. Lo asa shlichuto, if he didn't carry out his agency, then the shliach is ma'al. Then he is the one who is held accountable for the mi'ilah. So Gemara says, v'chi asa shlichuto amai ma'al. Why is it that when he does the shlichut and he carries it out, the balabait is ma'al, v'chi zeh hutev v'zeh mitayev? One person does the aveira and the other person is culpable for his action. That's what it means, that it's a difficult halacha which hangs by a hair's breadth. What we have over here is a principle that's found throughout the Torah, which is ein shliach l'dvar aveira. There is no agency for doing something wrong or doing an aveira. Over here in Mi'ilah, Mi'ilah is the exception to that rule. In Mi'ilah, there is agency for an aveira. There is shliach l'dvar aveira. And therefore, if someone sends a messenger and the messenger carries out his instructions and is mo'el, both of them are unwittingly or unknowingly, both of them are shogegim, then the balabait is responsible, and there is shliach l'dvar aveira when it comes to mi'ilah. On the other hand, if the shliach does not carry out his agency, then he abrogated his connection to the sender, and since he abrogated that connection, then he becomes responsible for his actions, and he will then be held culpable for the mi'ilah, not the balabait. So this is an exception to the rule, which is ein shliach l'dvar aveira, which is a logical argument that Gemara says, divrei arav, divrei talmid, divrei mishomim. If you have a choice between listening to God and listening to someone else, you always listen to God. So if you choose to carry it out, then you're responsible for your action, and you will be held accountable for your action, even though somebody else sent you, because that person has a defense in saying, he shouldn't have listened to me, he should have listened to God. By mi'ilah, that does not apply, and we'll see why that is in the Gemara. So that's what the Gemara says. This halacha is halacha that doesn't apply anywhere else in the Torah, and it's like hanging by a hair's breadth. So Amar Rava, Amai Koshio, what's the problem here? Dilma Shani Mi'ilah, Diyalfi Chet Chet Mitruma. The reason Mi'ilah has this din is because we have a Gzeir Shav of Chet Chet Mitruma, and just like by Truma it says, Lo Tisa Alav Chet, and by Mi'ilah it says, V'chat Abi Shaga Bi Koshe Hashem. Just like by Truma, there's a din of Gamatam, there's a Riboy for a Shliach. So too, by Mi'ilah, they have the same Riboy. So the din of Chet Chet teaches us, just like you have a Shliach by Truma, or Shlichut works by Truma, so too, Shlichut works by Mi'ilah. So Mahatam Shluchu Shal Adam Kimoto, just like by Truma, if an agent carries out the activities of the Balabait, it's as if the Balabait did whatever was supposed to be done with regards to the Truma, so too, Afkan Shluchu Shal Adam Kimoto. The Torah teaches us that by Mi'ilah, the agent of the individual acts on behalf of the individual as if he did it himself. Ela Amar Rava lo nitzricha ela d'tanyo. Now Rava says, no, we need it for this brayta. Nizkar balabait velo nizkar shliach. The balabait remembers that the monies that he gave to the shliach were monies of hekdesh, but the shliach doesn't know it. Then shliach mal. Then all of a sudden the shliach becomes the mo'el over here. The reason being that there is no mi'ilah by mezid. Mi'ilah only applies when you are a shogeg. So now the balabait lost his status as a shogeg because he knows that the money is money of hekdesh. And therefore, he becomes a mezid and is no longer culpable for the mi'ilah. On the other hand, the shliach, who doesn't know, is still held culpable for his actions. So over here, he is an unwitting participant in this, and all of a sudden, he becomes culpable for the mi'ilah, even though he knew nothing about it. So Gemara says, shliach, anyo, my kovit, this poor shliach, this poor agent, what did he know? He didn't know it was mi'ilah, he didn't know it was misappropriated hekdesh, he just was carrying out the bidding of the person who sent him. That's what it means. That's what it means. This is a very precarious halacha. So Amar Rav Ashi, my kushya. Who says that that's a question? Dilma mitad havi amotzi ma'ot hekdesh l'chulin. Maybe it's similar to someone who misappropriates ma'ot of hekdesh and then makes them chulin. Just like when a person uses or misappropriates ma'ot of hekdesh, by doing so he changes them from hekdesh to chulin, he profanes the money, and he's held culpable for that shkigah, or that being a shogeg. So to over here, we're going to hold the shliach responsible for that aspect of shogeg. Ela amar Rav Ashi lo nitzrucha l'knan. We need it for this Natal Evan or Kurashal Hekdesh, if he takes a stone or a beam of Hekdesh, Harizeh lo Ma'al. There's no Me'ilah. Natnal Chaveiro, who Ma'al? If he gives over to his friend, then he's Mo'el. V'chaveiro lo Ma'al. And his friend is not Mo'el. Michte, Mishlo Shakula, Malihu, Mali Chaveiro. When he takes it, what does it make a difference if it's him or his friend? Why is it that he is Chayav and his friend is not Chayav for misappropriating Hekdesh? That Hainu Karim Netulim Bisara. Again, this is why it's such a precarious halacha. It's hanging by a hair's breadth. My Kushi again. Dilma Kedishmol. Damar Shmol. Hacha Begizbar. Ha Misurot Lo Avnei Binyan Askinan. That the case here by Me'ilah is not your typical case of Me'ilah. It's talking about the treasurer of Hekdesh. The treasurer of Hekdesh who has permission to deal with these items. So when he takes them or moves them around, there is no Me'ilah because he's functioning like the Gizbar as the treasurer of Hekdesh. Because wherever it is, it's still in the possession of Hekdesh, and it's with the Gizbar. So then, when the transference happens, when he passes it to his friend, that's what causes the Mi'ilah. So even though until that point, he was walking around with it and taking it, it didn't create the problem of Mi'ilah, because there was no misappropriation, because he's the Gizbar. But only when he gives it over to his friend, that is a misappropriation, and that's why the Mi'ilah happens at that threshold. So Gemara says, okay, Elam Yisefa. We'll learn it out from the latter half of that Braita. Bono betoch beito. If he builds it into his house, arizeh lo ma'al. If you put it into his house, there's no Me'ilah. Ad shiyidur tachteh b'shave pruta. Until he lives under it and gets benefit of a shave pruta. Michtei. Shnuyeh shanyeh. Malidar, malilodar. He changed it from being something of Hekdesh, misappropriated, put it into his house. Then why does it make a difference? If he lived under it, he didn't live under it, he got benefit, didn't get benefit. So hainu ka'arim atluim b'sara. Again, that's why this is a precarious halacha hanging by a hair's breadth, because it doesn't make so much sense. Again, the Gemara says, my kushya, dama the Rav. That's halacha that Rav told us. Dama Rav, gugon shenicha pi aruba. That he just put the board down. He didn't change it. He didn't build it into the building. He simply stuck the beam over the sunlight that was there. So he didn't change it. That's why he wasn't mo'el in it until he lives under it. Idarbe in, ilo darbe lo. Until he gets hana'a, then there's no misappropriation of Hekdesh. As soon as he misappropriates Hekdesh, that's when he's going to be Mo'el. So, Elul Olam, Kidder Rava. We have to go back to the original statement of Rava. Why is this any different than someone who is B'Shogeg, spends money of Hekdesh by accident by Shogeg? He forgot it was Hekdesh, and he's held accountable for that, and he's Mo'el. So why isn't the Shliach in that same category when the Baal HaBayit backs out over here? So when the Baal HaBayit remembers, then Shliach held accountable because he's like any other Shogeg. Where it says that the unique status of Mi'ilah derives from the fact that because in other cases of Shogeg, Shogeg is where you know there's Hekdesh there, and you weren't careful enough about it, and that's why it got misappropriated. That's why we hold you accountable for it. So you violate the Yunyune, because you should have checked into it. You should have been more careful with dealing with Ma'ot Hekdesh. Hacha Mi'adah. Over here, the Shliach has no clue that there are Ma'ot Hekdesh over here. He is literally an innocent participant. He is an unwitting accomplice to the problem over here. And it's really an ones. And yet he's still held accountable. That's why Zainu, Karima Tuluim Bisara. And that's why this is considered to be a precarious halakha. Because if you looked at it objectively, you wouldn't think that the Shliach should have been Chayav in this case. Because again, the Shliach is a complete ones. He didn't do anything that would make you think that he should be Chayav. He was unwitting. He didn't know that it was Ma'ot Hekdesh. He was sent as an agent. And just because the Baal HaBayit remembers along the way and becomes amazed, now he becomes accountable for it. Had the Baal HaBayit not remembered, the Baal HaBayit would have been accountable and culpable for the problem. But because the Baal HaBayit all of a sudden remembered, now the Shliach's on the hook for something he had no idea about. He had no way to know that he should have been careful over here. So he's really an ones, not a shogeg, and yet we hold him accountable or culpable. And that's the reason why this is a unique halakha, or precarious halakha. Because you can't compare it to a normal case of shogeg. And we're going to go with that statement of Rava that we saw earlier, that this is the unique aspect of Mi'ilah that is different than other halachot, and that's why it's Tulim Kisara, it's a precarious halakha that we don't find in other places, but comes out of Mi'ilah. So we learned the number of dinim here, which are brought up in the Masechtot and Kodoshim with regards to Mi'ilah, but the Gemara here touched on a number of items that are exceptional about Mi'ilah. Number one is, there is Shliach Lidvar Aveira. The Achronim debate about whether there is also Shliach Lidvar Aveira when the agent is unwitting or doesn't know that he's doing an Aveira. Some of them claim that in other places, not just here by Mi'ilah, but even by other Dinim, there is a Shliach Lidvar Aveira, as long as you can't invoke the logic of Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmid, Divrei Nishomim. If the person has a decision to make between listening to you and to God, then that's one thing. But if he doesn't know he's doing something wrong, then he becomes an unwitting accomplice, and there might be a shliach barver in other areas. By Mi'ilah, this is where the core of this halacha is learned, is in the din of Mi'ilah. And we learn out from the fact that there's a gzera shavet truma, just like shlichut works by truma, so too shliach works by mi'ilah, and a person can be a shliach l'dvar aveira with regards to mi'ilah. The second halacha that we learn is that you have to be a shogeg. In order to be chayav for mi'ilah, you have to be a shogeg. If anybody remembers, if any of the parties remember along the way that there is a problem of hekdeshir, they're not going to be chayav for mi'ilah. So if the balabayit remembers, he's off the hook now, and the shliach is on the hook. On the other hand, if the shliach remembers and the balabait didn't remember, then the balabait is on the hook. Number three is with regards to the agency. Only if the shliach carries out his shlichut is the balabait chayav. But if the shliach does his own thing and he abrogates his shlichut, his agency, then the balabait's not going to be chayav for that, because how can you hold him culpable if he didn't carry out the agency the way he was supposed to, and therefore the shliach will be on the hook in that instance. The other thing about mi'ilah is that mi'ilah has different manifestations. In cases where it's something that can be used or is utilized or changed, then when you change ownership from hekdesh to another party, that's when the mi'ilah, or the profaning of the object, takes place. On the other hand, if it's an object where it stays intact and can be used like a cup, can be used multiple times without hurting it, then the requirement to be chayav in mi'ilah is a shaveh pruta, hana'a of a shaveh pruta. You got a benefit of a shaveh pruta. Once someone is mo'el in the object, then it moves from being hekdesh into chulin. Person who misappropriates hekdesh changes the object from hekdesh into chulin, and then therefore the next party who uses it is not culpable, because it's no longer something that is considered to be hekdesh. In addition to that, if you have something where the mi'ilah is created by the hana'ab, shaveh pruta, then as long as there's a shaveh pruta for each individual that's participating, then you can have multiple people be mo'el. Even though there's generally a principle of ein mi'ilah achar mi'ilah, you can't have mi'ilah happen twice, because after the first mi'ilah, it now becomes kulin. Nevertheless, in a case where the mi'ilah is created by hana'ah, then as long as there's a residual hana'ah available for the next party, they also will be held culpable for the din of mi'ilah. The last thing is with regards to the gizbar. When you're talking about the treasurer of hekdesh, since he's the treasurer of hekdesh, and he can move the hekdesh around because he's considered to be responsible for it, and wherever he takes it, it's within the ownership of God or ownership of hekdesh, he can only be mo'el if he does something to the object, either to get hana from it, or he does something to change the object. Otherwise, no matter where the gizbar takes it, it won't be considered a misappropriation or a problem of mi'ilah. So that's just a quick summary of the halachot of mi'ilah. The Gemara was trying through each of those halachot to say that that was geharim atluim. Those were curious halachot, because all of them are unique to mi'ilah. In all the cases, we found maybe a parallel halacha, which makes it not so unique. In the end, we say that the one halacha that's unique is when the shliach is made accountable, when the balabait realizes that he is using monies of hekdesh. Now the shliach's on the hook, even though he's not really even a shogeg, because he knows nothing of this mot hekdesh. Nevertheless, he's held accountable or culpable, and that's in the final statement of the Gemara. That is what is the precarious halacha that is associated with mi'ilah. In all of these cases, by chagigah, by Shabbat, and by mi'ilah, they do have halachot that are written explicitly in the Torah, and they have many halachot that are in the Torah, but they have aspects of them, and aspects that are fundamental to the halachot of mi'ilah, chagigah, and Shabbat that are not written in the Torah explicitly, but are part of the mahut of the mitzvah. And that's what the Gemara is describing to us in each of these cases, like by Shabbat, the melacha of melechet machshevet, by the fact that requirement of melechet machshevet in order to be chayav for melachot on Shabbat, with regards to chagigah, that the meaning of the word chagigah means a zevach, that means a korban. And over here, by mi'ilah, the unique dinim of mi'ilah, of shlichut, and the ability to be culpable, even though one knows nothing about it, all these are a fundamental part of each of these mitzvot. But they're not explicitly written in the Torah, and that's what's meant in the Mishnah. Small amount of psukim, not necessarily small amount. There are large numbers of psukim that speak about it, but mikra muat, the halacha that we're thinking of, or that unique aspect that we're thinking about, doesn't have a lot written about it. Halachot merubot, and they have tons of halachot that surround it, and nevertheless, they are keharim. These are like mountains, meaning that these are a fundamental part of the mitzvot, but they're hanging by a hair's breadth because they're mikra muat. There's a small limud or a small nuance that we learn out of the psukim that teaches this halacha, The lachot mubot, and from that we have all the lachot, or all the fundamentals of these mitzvot. Okay? We're going to stop over here by the two dots on the top of Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph.